You're listening to the Mets Blog Q&A Cast, presented by Citi, your podcast for one-on-one Mets conversations.
What's up, Mets fans? I'm Matt Cerrone. Thanks for listening to the Mets Blog Q&A Cast, presented by Citi. Mets home runs go a lot further than you think. For every Mets home run hit at Citi Field this season, Citi will donate $2,000 to No Kid Hungry to help fight childhood hunger. Every dollar donated is enough for No Kid Hungry to provide 10 healthy meals for kids. And with the Mets having a record-setting season, the program has raised over $190,000. To learn more about it, go to Mets.com/Citi. This week I'm talking with our old friend Michael Barron. I wanted to catch up with him. He had a nice little rant going on Twitter last night about some of Terry Collins' moves. I realized I hadn't talked to Mike in a while, and some of you guys were asking how he's doing, so I thought, let's get him on. Let's talk a little bit at this point in the season, kind of look at what Terry's doing, and maybe even talk a little bit about next season, even though the Mets are in the middle of a playoff race for this year, and this year's not over. But I think some of these conversations about Terry going on right now actually relate very much to the winter and some of the moves they'll make next year. But before we do that, for Islanders fans, definitely check out this week's show, the Islanders podcast we have called Islanders Point Blank. It's really a must-listen. Howie Rose, who obviously you guys know from the Mets radio broadcast, he just stepped down as the play-by-play guy for the Islanders. He's on the show. He talks about the team's new owners and his regrets about leaving and what he does with his winters now that he doesn't have to call hockey games. So it's a good show. Check it out on the SNY.TV audio network. You can find it on iTunes or SoundCloud or wherever you listen to podcasts. Again, it's the Islanders Point Blank podcast. Check it out with Howie Rose. And with that, here's my conversation with Michael Barron. So last night was, I'm not even sure what was going on. I actually admittedly, I had the game on DVR and I tuned out for a little bit. And then when I came back in, it was the eighth inning. And it was so confusing that I thought I had missed a bunch of things that sort of would have made what was going on in the eighth inning make sense. And now in hindsight, I realized that wasn't the case. It was almost like Terry had a quota on, you know, in-game moves. Like he had to do something. I don't know what was happening. So, I mean, just from your perspective, sitting, you know, watching the game, I mean, what was going through your mind?
Well, you know, I say a lot, and we've talked about this a lot over the years, even during their lean times, is that, you know, if you're going to lose, you have to lose with your best people on the field. And I think too often, especially, you know, in the last few weeks, you know, Terry has kind of outmaneuvered himself. And, you know, you saw it again in the eighth inning when he took Addison Reed, who, by the way, is the best setup man in baseball, out of a game in the eighth inning, which is his inning, in a game he had to win. He absolutely had to win that game. And he took his best player, his best possible option off the field. And that's what, before anything transpired, that's immediately what I thought. I couldn't believe he took him out. And, you know, he may call to the point that he's overworked, that, you know, he's worked X amount of days in a row or X amount of days out of, you know, 10. But this is a pennant race. You know, Al Leiter used to say rest is for the winter. You know, this is the time to shine. And I just completely disagreed with Reed coming out with Collins lifting Reed. I couldn't believe it.
So a couple things. Agreed. And what really, I think what has me most concerned about, not just right now or what I think might be some of the moves that have cost them games. And ordinarily, I'm of the mindset that the manager is somewhat insignificant, not unimportant, just not as important as I think most fans make it out to be. Obviously, performance is the most important thing, but this is where I'm a little concerned because I feel like it's not even some. At this point, it's a lot of the moves are putting guys into position to fail. Whereas like Bobby Valentine used to tell me all the time, like the manager's job really is to keep guys out of position to fail. It's not, you know, you've got 25 players, they're all going to have highs and lows, but you need to use, you know, your information and your wits to keep guys out of situations where you know they shouldn't be. And like, we're watching these games and, you know, look, fans shouldn't be managers, but when, you know, 99% of media and fans agree that what you're doing doesn't make a ton of sense and is probably the wrong move, it probably is. And then to compound that, and this is really my point, his explanations are equally confusing and make it seem like he's a little unaware. And that to me is the alarming part. So like, you know, and then he catches himself sort of in these moments where it's a little contradictory and he punts. So like last night, he's trying to explain the move with Reed and Smoker, and somehow that had to do with James Loney. And he like redirects the question and it just seems like very unclear thoughts and unclear decisions and a lot of contradictions. And I think that is what confuses me. I always bring up the Blevins thing. I was talking about this earlier with some people that, like, you know, we mentioned that he didn't use Jerry Blevins earlier in the year because he was hurt and he had his arm wrapped. And then when they asked Blevins about it, Blevins said, "I always have my arm wrapped. I'm a pitcher. It's the games." You know, it's things like that, or not knowing, you know, whether Bruce is faster than Nimmo, or, you know, it's just, and I always go back to those two things because they really sort of underscore the larger point. And it just, again, when you're in this type of a situation, a three-way tie with a group of teams that have underachieved and overachieved, and it could be anybody's race at this point, every little thing does matter. Like, ordinarily it doesn't, but every little move matters. And I think that's what's kind of got me a little scared about the future, not just right now, but also next season, you know, because he's still under contract.
Well, I totally agree. And I also don't forget the Wilmer Flores fiasco. When he forgot, when he admitted to forgetting to pinch run for him because he was worried about who was coming in to pitch.
Right, so where is... Okay, so I saw you on Twitter mention Bob Guerin, and because I completely agree with this. Like, what is... I don't know. I only know Dick Scott from interviews we've done with him over the years. He was incredibly intelligent, very measured, and a smart guy when it came to at least that job. I don't know much about him as a bench coach, but what I do know is I've never seen him speak. Like, it's always... He's very quiet on the bench. Like, where is he... It seems to me that that's... You know, that's the role of the bench coach. Like, they're there for those sorts of, that type of support. And so a lot of these decisions, I wonder if a lot of this has to do with Guerin not being there, because he was very in tune with Terry. He was always in his ear. They argued a lot, you know. And so, and that's a good thing, I think.
Well, and Bob Guerin, you know, he was kind of the scientist in the room as well. You know, he was the one giving the sabermetric advice, so to speak,
he made the lineup a lot.
Oh yeah, he's great. And you remember he has managerial experience too. And I'm not, this is completely subjective. I'm just, you know, I'm totally spitballing. I have no way to back it up. But you know, you made a point of, you know, essentially saying, okay, well, Terry is ultimately accountable, but you know, he does have a supporting cast around to give him advice, to give him information, and really, in a way, you know, a guy like Dick Scott or, you know, even Dan Warthen, someone should chime in and say, hey, you know, don't forget to take Flores out, or don't forget to make the double switch this way or that way, and, you know, things like that. You know, Terry's got a million different things going, and again, like, it's not an excuse, but, you know, that's why his staff is that's partially why his staff is paid, you know. And you know, I believe there's an element missing that was once there potentially with Bob Guerin, in that, you know, Guerin, you know, can make these moves in his sleep. I mean, you've talked to him, he's like a mad scientist when it comes to baseball, and he's just, it's everything, it's not even a thought process to him, it's second nature, it's instinct. And you know, again, like, I don't know what's being said in game. You know, I'm not sitting by the dugout anymore, so I can't hear the conversations. But, you know, one thing we do know is that Bob Guerin isn't there, and the mistakes right now are so glaring and didn't happen to this degree. And, you know, maybe it's because, you know, like you said, you know, these, every little moment in these games counts so much because it's a three-way tie, because there are 10 days left, and you really don't know, you know, how this is all going to play out. And so maybe these mistakes were taking place, but it wasn't hurting him that badly, you know, in years where these games had no meaning, or last year when they just ran away with the division, you know. But I don't know. He's just making decisions which they don't even drive me crazy. I sit there and say, why did that just happen? Why didn't this just happen? Well, fundamental thing.
Yeah. I mean, Tim Tuffle's another, you know, to, as an extension of the coaching staff, like, it's the inconsistencies that are concerning, right? So, like, you know, I was talking to somebody earlier, and they mentioned Razor Shines, and, like, you know, he used to just send everybody, right? Like, that was the knock on him. And then there's some people that are like, oh, they never send anyone. Tuffle, you know, there's situations where, you know, they're running on guys with a cannon arm, and he sends them. And then there's times where they're bloop hits and somebody should score and he's holding them. And it's just like he's all over the place with his decision. So like that's just another example. What it says to me is that it's about preparation, right? Mm-hmm. And knowing it's awareness. It's knowing the arms of the outfield. It's knowing the speed of your runners. It's knowing the situations. It's not like Tuffel's a stupid guy. I mean, obviously he's smart and he's where he's at, but like, you know, why are those things getting missed? Why is there not a hierarchy or a structure or a workflow where when there's a runner on second base and we have to decide if there's a pinch runner, someone else is handling whether the bullpen needs to get, like, what is the confusion and the inconsistency? And that to me does stem from the manager. It's also the personnel. And it says to me that win or lose, I mean, unless they go on to win a World Series, which I think is going to be very difficult just given the roster and the dynamics. But if they were to do that, obviously that changes the conversation. But short of that, it just seems to me like they need a significant overhaul on the coaching staff and the position players, quite frankly, because they can't do a lot of the things that I think the coaching staff needs them to do. So the whole thing is just kind of outside of the pitchers, the rest of the other, you know, components of the roster just seem to be out of sorts.
Well, it's a horribly imbalanced roster, you know, with the 55 left-handed hitting outfielders, and I jokingly referred to Tim Tebow as yet another left-handed hitting outfielder the other day. That's on the front office. That's roster construction. Yes, true. They're injured, and with this roster, you know, the broken roster that it is, if they get to the wild card game in this state with no pitching and a bunch of kids on the field, that's just a miracle in and of itself. Sure. Everything from there is gravy, but that doesn't mean changes don't need to be made. I mean, you can't look at it and say, well, ultimately we got there and that's the most important thing, you know?
Well, it's hard to balance those two things. I admit to that. Like, I write it and it's hard to make the, like, where's the cross section or where's the balance between, wow, you know, they really, you know, in some regards, overachieved. Like, they underachieved in the sense that, like, I think everybody expected out of the gate that they were going to get to a World Series. But there was a point this season where things very easily could have fallen apart for justifiable reasons, given the injuries and everything that was going on. And yet to be able to pull them out of that fire and get them into this position where the reality is that they're still very much in control of their own fate is pretty remarkable. And that can't be undercut. But my point is that, you know, maybe if some of these mistakes weren't being made, they'd be three or four games up in the wild card. It'd be a completely different conversation. And so, you know, I do think, well, like I said earlier, I think the manager can often be overrated. You know, I actually do feel like there are at least two or three instances where, now look, you never know how the games are going to play out. And maybe if certain moves were made, they still would have gone on to lose those games. But it just sort of looks like there are instances here where his decision-making may have been the difference.
It feels that way, and certainly in the last 2 days, of course, you know, in the sixth inning on Tuesday, when he just wasn't ready to yank Gesellman the third time through the order, where it's, you know, it's statistically evident that he struggles the third time through, and he just wasn't ready to make a move, and it hurt him. You know, it was just another example. You know, but then again, if NCR didn't catch that ball yesterday, the Mets win and may not necessarily be.
Yeah, you know, that always can't be the excuse, though. He goes to that all the time, like even last night. Well, if the ground ball is caught, then, though, that's true. But, you know.
And it shouldn't come down to that either.
Right. Like, you can make that argument all the time. And, like, that's baseball. That's how it works. Like, sometimes that happens, and most of the times it doesn't.
Right. No, I totally agree, and it's like I said before, it's the first time in his tenure where the moves just seem to be not only standing out, but really hurting the team, and I don't know if his reputation is the right word, or, you know, certainly his credibility, especially when he goes on to try and explain these things. It's just, to me, it just makes it worse.
It reminds
you just want
me,
to say sometimes, look, I messed up.
Yeah, it reminds me, I hate to make this comparison, but it reminds me of the end of Omar Minaya's tenure when Omar was clearly overwhelmed and just there was a lot going on. He just wasn't doing a good job handling, you know, explaining these things. Because early on, that wasn't an issue for Omar. He was very much in command and was, you know, explained. But I just think when things got a little overwhelmed and a little crazy, maybe was second guessing his words and he was in his own head. And like, sometimes it sounds like that with Terry a little bit, but just kind of reminds me of this, like, because he didn't explain things like this 3 or 4 years ago. But to your point, and I think you might be right, it may just be that the magnifying glass is different and our ears are open in a little bit different way. Like, you know, you don't pinch run for Flores 3 years ago, no one says anything, because it's like, well, I mean, we're here to evaluate. You know, it's a different thing. Now we're evaluating him more than maybe we're evaluating the players, because it's a, now it's a tightrope. It's a high wire act. And the slightest slip up is going to get completely analyzed, you know?
Yeah, and it's frustrating because I think he's gotten a lot out of guys you otherwise wouldn't expect would perform under these conditions. You know, he's gotten, you know, again, he's responsible ultimately, even for the good things. And, you know, you have to give him credit for what they've gotten out of guys like Rivera and Gesellman and Lugo, you know, shielding all those guys from the noise. And that's, I think, what he's incredibly good at and what he's become excellent at, one of the better managers around it, at shielding everyone from the noise. But, you know, again, you know, it's all well and good until your own decisions as a field general start to bite you, and they most certainly have in the last 3 weeks. And it's become problematic because it has cost them in a lot of these situations.
I was told many years ago when Sandy first came on to expect to expect things to run like the Giants. That was the San Francisco Giants were essentially the model, which is this heavy pitching staff, young kids. Position players are going to be very fluid, and there's going to be an ebb and flow. But for the most part, you know, the goal is to have, you know, a competitive team every year and make a run at the playoffs, if not get in. And, you know, I look at last year and I think, okay, they didn't win the World Series, but let's just, they got there. So it was still the same length of a season. It was still essentially the same, except, you know, minus a couple games. And I think about the Giants and I think, you know, if you look back at their ebb and flow, the pitchers are consistent, but the position players often do get changed up. You know, that second year, the year after the World Series, is always kind of a rough thing. That, you know, they have kind of different guys shuffling around. They find their balance, and then the next year they're more solid and they're more successful. And I think about the Mets that way, and like, that's what it looks like to me. This looks like the year after, a lot of injuries, pitchers, young pitchers, you know, hard time adjusting, a lot of big workload last year. You know, you had guys that maybe overachieved. And so you're trying to fit them in, and now we're sort of at a spot where there needs to be a little bit of a shuffle, whether it's the position players or, as we've talked a lot about here, the coaching staff. Do you kind of agree with that point, or would you be more inclined to kind of keep things together and press and roll the dice on another year of this group? I mean, we're because that's a big move to make systemic changes in the middle of what seems like, you know, a turning point. At the same time, can they get there?
That's a good question, and I think the one I'm going to stick to my guns, and I've been with this, and I've been saying really since the winter meetings that the kind of offense, the kind of baseball players they have making up their offense, is probably not something that's sustainable in, you know, for an extended period of time. I mean, you know, we see, you know, a power dominant lineup with no speed and an inability to make contact can work in bursts and potentially against some of the lesser teams. And I think we saw that a lot in April. But then for 3.5 months, they were a power hitting team that didn't hit home runs. And, you know, you can throw the injury excuse out there, but for the most part, they weren't that badly banged up in the end. You know, for a long time, it was just Lucas Duda and David Wright. And, you know, when you look at David Wright, I mean, they've gotten more out of everybody else who's replaced him than they were getting out of David Wright at the time, you know, minus his presence and his experience, of course, which is irreplaceable. But I think, you know, in terms of the content, the philosophy, I mean, they have to get faster. They have to maybe give up some power in exchange for guys who spray the ball around the field. And, you're seeing a better, you know, I know they struggled in the last week, but they, you know, guys like TJ Rivera do that, and the offense has been better. And I know Asdrubal Cabrera has absolutely been on a tear since he came off the DL, but he's striking out a lot less and making a lot more contact, and it just works. And so I think there needs to be an extension of that when they consider their off-season moves. And that doesn't mean they should let Yoenis Cespedes walk, because I don't think there's anybody on the planet that believes that they can let him go. But I think they need him as their centerpiece, you know, power bat, and get guys who can get on base more consistently around him, and that's how they're going to be able to sustain an offense. I mean, that's exactly what the Cubs do. They have a couple of centerpiece power guys, and guys who just get on base, and they score a million runs a game. And, you know, aside from an incredible pitching staff, I mean, you know, they're able to withstand bad runs through the rotation. Right now, with the way the offense is constructed, or I should say, you know, earlier in the year, I mean, we saw with the way the offense was constructed, they couldn't win 2-1 games because they were in such a funk, and they weren't fast enough. They couldn't connect enough. And I think that's where they need to go if they intend to be successful for a long time.
Thanks for listening to the Mets Blog Q&A cast presented by Citi. Again, for every Mets home run hit at Citi Field this season, Citi will donate $2,000 to their No Kid Hungry program to help fight childhood hunger. Every dollar donated is enough for No Kid Hungry to provide 10 healthy meals for kids. And with the Mets having a record-setting season, the program has already raised over $190,000. To learn more about it, go to Mets.com/Citi. Thanks again for Mike for coming on the show, joining us a little bit. It's great to catch up with him. Haven't talked to him in a while. Always love hearing his insights into the team. I think he pays close attention to those little things, and so I appreciate what he has to say. We'll be back again next week with another Q&A cast, talking more Mets, hopefully talking about a team that's leading the wild card race, not just tied with two other teams, but we'll see how things shake over the next few days. Thanks again for listening. Talk to you again next week, and as always, let's go Mets!
This has been the Mets Blog Q&A cast, presented by Citi, part of the SNY.TV audio network.